So good morning, everyone. I'm Christo Wilson, and today I'm going to be talking about SpikeStrip, which is our some server-side technology we've developed to stop people from crawling OSNs. So this is joint work. Yeah, I'm going to be very popular today. This is joint work with my colleagues at the University of Santa Barbara, including Alessandra and my advisor, Ben Zhao. So let's get started. Okay, so here is your example social networking profile. You know, there's nothing really special about it. The data is sort of generic, nothing really stands out. But whether you realize it or not, this data is actually very sensitive. So let's look at some examples. In this case, a marketer has seen that I live in Santa Barbara, and they're using that to target ads to me. You know, that's a little bit creepy, but it's not so bad. What's worse is that this information is actually very valuable to people who want to do spamming and phishing. So in this example, someone has used my name, my birthday, and my girlfriend's name to construct a very convincing phishing email to try to convince me to click a link, which is clearly malicious. So this is bad. But it wouldn't be so bad if this was sort of an isolated incident. But the fact is that this isn't an isolated incident, because the big OSNs are big and only getting bigger. So we know that there are crawlers actively collecting data from OSNs. So for example, there's a fellow named Pete Warden who recently crawled over 200 million accounts from Facebook. And the only reason that data didn't go public is because Facebook sued him. There's companies involved in this. For example, Rapleaf crawls OSNs and sells the data to marketers. There's also a company called 80 Legs that offers crawling as a service. So for a dollar, you can get 150,000 pages crawled. So you can actually crawl an OSN at scale, you know, quite cheaply. And of course, there's us. There's the research crowd. We're involved in this. And there's many more emerging threats in this category. So there's recent work being done showing that there's more and more phishing attacks and spamming, targeting OSNs, people looking to take that data and use it for nefarious purposes. So this begs the question, how can we control all these crawlers and control the information that's leaking out? So users are sort of unwilling and unable to defend themselves. So part of the reason here is the well-known privacy paradox. You know, people are sort of paranoid about their security, but they're also very lazy, and they're not actually going to do anything to protect themselves. We, the people in this room, are basically the privacy-conscious minority. We're the ones protecting our data. But research has shown that this doesn't actually extend to the general populace. Also, we have the problem of OSNs having notoriously difficult privacy settings in some cases. So, for example, a helpful flowchart from the New York Times about Facebook's privacy settings prior to their recent revamp. So you have 9 pages, 50 settings, and over 170 total options. So clearly this is pretty complex for the average user. So this means that if users can't protect themselves, then the OSNs have to go the extra mile to protect their user base. So then the question is how? So existing anti-crawler technology is very insufficient. Most of it was developed back in the mid-90s when the web was sort of young, and it doesn't scale to the problems of today, specifically things like botnets, where you can have massively distributed crawlers that are very difficult to track and stop, and they can gather information very rapidly. So we'll get to a little bit more on this later, but the point is that we need a new technology to stop this. And that's where we come in. So we've developed something called SpikeStrip, and the goal of the project is to defend against malicious crawlers that are targeting OSNs. So there are some sub-goals. We want to do this in a way that's seamless to end users and doesn't stop beneficial crawlers, so you know, Googlebot, your search and indexing bots. We want to have minimal impact on the web server, so very low overhead. And we want to be compatible with existing technology, so existing browsers, existing web servers, et cetera. So the key thing that enables SpikeStrip is this novel link encryption primitive that we've developed. We use link encryption to track people very precisely. And once you can track them, you can then rate limit them. And this is how we're going to throttle crawlers. So we actually implement and evaluate a prototype of this technology. And we show that we can implement arbitrary slowdowns onto crawlers. So administratively defined thresholds, very tight bounds on what they can do. And we do all this with imposing a very low overhead on the server. So it's very efficient. So the outline for the rest of the talk, I'll start by going into existing anti-crawler defense mechanisms and why they're insufficient. Then we'll get into the design of SpikeStrip itself. And finally, we'll evaluate the technology. OK, so existing defense mechanisms. We'll go through these in order, starting from the oldest and sort of silliest to the most modern, and go from there. So the original anti-crawler protocol is robots.txt. It's just a text file that you place in the root of your web server that lists some rules that crawlers are supposed to follow. So it's a little bit like a road sign. People see it, they're supposed to obey the rules, and that's just how it goes. The problem is that compliance is voluntary. So you have a crawler, it's free to just ignore the sign and do whatever it wants. So this is clearly ineffective. A step up from that is filtering based on HTTP request headers. So there's lots of information in the request header you can use to filter, user agent strings, the referrers, et cetera. And websites can look at that information and decide if they want to accept requests or reject them. The problem here is that the HTTP header requests are completely controlled by the client. So the client is free to falsify them if they want. So a quick example. If a crawler identifies themselves as Googlebot, the server can deny the request and say, oh, I don't allow crawlers. And they're free to do that. But the client can just as easily pretend that they're Firefox and crawl at will. So again, this is insufficient. So a step up from that is IP address-based tracking. So the idea here is that you look at the number of requests associated with different IPs. And then if you see certain IPs generating too much traffic, you can ban them or throttle them, et cetera. So there's actually two problems with this. The first is NATs and proxies. So if we have a bunch of normal, non-malicious clients who all access our website through a NAT, let's say, to the server, that looks like one IP address is sending it lots and lots of traffic. And it's likely to not honor those requests because it can't tell that these are actually legitimate clients. On the flip side, this also has a problem with botnets. So in a botnet, we have a master which is going to delegate its crawling task to many, many slaves. From the server's perspective, however, it actually looks like lots of geographically distributed, benign clients. It can't tell that there's actually this master working behind the scenes to crawl all the data and aggregate. So IP address tracking is insufficient to stop this. So the last thing that OSINs try to do to stop crawlers is they use authenticated user accounts. So this is typical to almost every OSN. If you want access, you have to sign up, you have to log in, and once you've logged in, the site can track you. If you're sending too many requests, they can ban you and they can throttle you because it's likely that you're crawling. So the problem here is that the URLs that the clients are seeing are session independent. So let's look at what this means. If we have a crawler and it has some queue of URLs that it would like to access, it also has some user accounts that are under its control. The crawler can start crawling the website, it starts exhausting its queue. Eventually the server realizes, you're crawling me, you're not allowed to do that, and it bans the account. But the crawler's not done yet, it still has URLs in its queue, so it's free to switch to another account and keep going, pick up right where it left off. So again, we haven't managed to stop the crawler. This is insufficient. So now let's look at how SpikeStrip defends against these things. So I've talked a little bit about the state of the art in anti-crawler technology. And it isn't enough. So the key problem is that the URLs are session independent, which means that crawlers are free to switch accounts. Crawlers, if they're distributed, can share state amongst each other. There just isn't a tight binding between the URLs and who they belong to. So you can't associate the two. So that's what we're gonna leverage to try to mitigate crawlers. So the key thing here is server-side link encryption. So the idea here is that we're gonna encrypt links that the server is serving using a combination of the client's session key and a server-side secret key. What this allows you to do is bind the URLs that are going out specifically to the user who's viewing them. And that enables you to track them very precisely. And once you can track them, you can then rate limit them. So let's look at an example of how this works. We have a client, we have a server, the server has some secret key. So the client requests the homepage of the website, the server receives this, and it formulates a response. So it generates a new session key for the user, and it produces the output HTML. It then encrypts the links in the output HTML using the secret key and the session key, and returns these things to the client. So at this point, the browser, you know, sees the page, they want to click the link and retrieve that content. So that's what they do. They generate a new request for the encrypted URL. We send that to the server, and then the server decrypts it using the session key and the secret key, and now it can honor the request as normal. So it generates a response, we return that to the client, no problem. Now what happens if, let's say, the OSN decides that this person is crawling and we want to ban them? We ban them, and they have to switch to a new user account, meaning their session key is now different. If they try to access the encrypted URL, they have a problem, because now when the server tries to decrypt it, they get end up with garbage, because one of the keys is now changed. So obviously, the server can't honor a request for this garbage URL. It generates an error, and that's what's returned to the client. Now, what if someone tries to get sneaky? They say, well, there's this encrypted URL, but I know that it actually points to a very specific plain text URL. So I'm just going to request the plain text and try to circumvent your security. Well, that doesn't work either. The server sees that this is an unencrypted URL, and it's smart enough to realize that this URL is within the protected portion of the site, meaning that only encrypted URLs are able to access this content. So as before, the server generates an error and returns that to the client. So that's how this technology works in general. So what are the implications of this on crawlers? So let's consider an example OSN website. It has a root, it has some web pages organized in a graph, and we're gonna have a crawler attempt to do a BFS on this. So we have our crawler, it shows up with some session key, and it begins crawling. Now, every time it sees a page, it then gets links to more pages, which it adds to its queue or its frontier. So iteratively, the crawler traverses these links. It visits the ones in its queue, it gets new URLs, it adds them to its frontier, etc. Now, at some point, the OSN realizes, you're a crawler, and I'm going to ban you. So we ban our crawler, it goes away, its session key is lost. But of course, the crawler isn't done. It still has URLs in its queue, and there's still more web pages to crawl. So the crawler comes back with a new instance, a new user account, a new session. Now at this point, the crawler has a problem, because all of the queued URLs are bound to its previous session, which means that given its new session key, none of these URLs are going to work. Since none of the URLs are going to work, the frontier is lost. So if the crawler wants to continue gathering data, it has to start from scratch, all the way back at the site root, retraverse everything back to where it was. So the point here is that we've successfully prevented session switching because of the binding, the cryptographic binding between the URLs and the session. So once you can reliably track people, because you know specifically for every URL which session it's associated with, you can then do very specific rate limiting. So because you can track people so specifically, the rate limits can be very tight. You don't need to pad for multiple people behind NATs or anything like that. And then you can do very strict enforcement, so banning accounts, throttling requests, etc. Now the challenge here is, how do you scale rate limiting to something the size of an OSN, with millions of users, hundreds of thousands of requests per second? So the solution is to use counting bloom filters. So this is a probabilistic data structure that's often used in high throughput network security contexts. And specifically, we use the D-left CBF variant because it's been shown to be the fastest and most space efficient CBF variant currently available. So to overview the spike strip, we use link encryption to create these per session views. Within each view, the URLs are unique and bound to that client. And this enables us to do a very specific tracking of the people and then rate limit them. So this prevents a lot of bad behavior. Crawlers can't switch sessions. Distributed crawlers can't share URLs because, again, this binding between their sessions. And this enables us to do strong rate limiting. Now, there's some additional benefits to this. We can do all these things without hindering users or existing beneficial crawlers. So SpikeStrip allows you to whitelist safe portions of your site that can be universally accessible. You can also whitelist the IPs and domains of good crawlers. So Googlebot can index you as normal, as quickly as it wants to, and your site continues to show up in search results. So now for the evaluation. So at this point, we have two big questions to ask. The first is our solution efficient? How much overhead are we causing at the server? So to test this, we actually implemented SpikeStrip as an Apache 2 module, and we run some micro benchmarks of it to evaluate its performance. The second question is the big one. Are we actually successful at throttling crawlers with our technology? So we created a mock OSN called Fakebook for our testing. We populated it with data from the Facebook London regional network. In total, the site is about 3.5 million pages large. It's hosted on a typical LAMP setup, and we're using 10 web servers and one MySQL database. So let's look at the performance numbers. So for these micro benchmarks, we're going to be looking at the performance of the three key SpikeStrip routines. So we'll start with the two routines that fire when requests are incoming to the server. The first routine is link decryption. So we have a request come in, there's an encrypted URL, you have to decrypt that. And this is very fast, it's a very simple operation. The second key routine is then rate limiting. So we have a request, it has some session key. You have to check the bloom filter table to see if the person has hit the rate limit and increment their counter. This is also quite fast. Now, the last routine is for outgoing HTML. So we've processed a request. We have a document to return to a user. We now have to encrypt all the URLs in that document. So link encryption on a page with zero URLs is very fast. It's just a single parse of the HTML. There's nothing there to do. You return it, and that's it. The amount of time it takes starts to go up as the number of URLs in the page increases, as you would expect. Because now you have to do lots of encryption. For every encryption, you have to do some mem copies to make room for the new URL, et cetera. But even in the worst case, overall, we only see SpikeStrip introducing about 7% additional overhead onto Apache. So this is quite reasonable, given the level of security that we're going for here. So now let's look at tests where we actually try to stop crawlers targeting our Fakebook website. So the blue line is a complete crawl of our site in the absence of SpikeStrip. So we see that it takes about 3 hours to crawl our 3.5 million pages. Now, the green and the red line are tests where SpikeStrip is active. So we set a rate limit of 1,000 requests per hour, which ends up being about 0.25 requests per second. So what we see right off the bat is that the rate limit is successful. So the crawler gets exactly 0.25 requests per second times the number of session keys that we've allotted it, aka the number of user accounts under its control. So this is good. You also see that because the rate limit is set on an hourly basis, you can actually watch the crawler exhaust its allotment at the beginning of each hour. Then it sort of flattens out because it can't do anything for the rest of the hour. It's exhausted its limit. And then as soon as the hour rolls over, it gets a new allotment and it can crawl a little bit more. But overall, you know, we went from a 3-hour crawl to not getting even 20% of the website in 4 hours. So we're very successful. So, as I said, very successful stopping the crawlers. And it's important to note here that the speed penalties that you're seeing in these graphs are completely arbitrary. So it's completely up to the administrator to define, you know, what is an acceptable rate limit, how slow do we want these things to go, and then we can enforce that. So also keep in mind that this is a very small website hosted on a very tiny cluster. You know, we're 10 servers and 3 million pages. When you scale this out to something the size of, let's say, Facebook, where we're talking about billions of pages and thousands of servers, the performance improvements are going to be even more drastic, just because all of the ceilings are that much larger. So in conclusion, we've identified this problem. OSN users are sort of defenseless in face of these large aggregators looking to take personally identifiable information. And it's up to the OSNs to secure the data, simply because the users really can't defend themselves. So we propose SpikeStrip. We use our novel link encryption technique to overcome the traditional challenges involved with anti-crawler technology. So this allows us to disambiguate users behind NATs and proxies, and we manage to stop botnets who have millions of IP addresses under their control. And we do all this without causing minimal inconvenience for users, for admins, et cetera. And finally, this works in practice, so it's available right now for Apache. It imposes minimal overhead on the server, and it's overall very successful at stopping crawlers. So the last thing is, this is open source. You can grab it right now, along with all of our benchmark code. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Hi, Dmitry Zinov from Suffolk University. This approach with link encryption has been used commercially by the second largest Russian social online network since 2007. I was trying to crawl their data, and at some point I realized that URLs don't make any sense anymore, at which point I realized they switched to this link encryption technique, which was exactly like 3 years ago. So this is not exactly a novel approach. It's just a remark.
It's too bad I don't speak Russian.
Yes. And I guess they also generate new session key for each request, which means it's extremely hard to trick the defense. So every time you make a request, they send you a new session key. So next time you go over there, you have to use the most recent session key, which makes scrolling virtually impossible.
Well, so the assumption here is that the session key is tied to a user account. So when you log in, you get a key. If you change your key mid-session, it's an automatic logout.
It is linked to the user account, but it also keeps changing as you crawl, which gives the website even more control over how much you can crawl and at what speed you can crawl. And basically, their policy is you cannot crawl them at any speed, and that's exactly what they were trying to accomplish.
Nice. Yeah. What's the name of that social network?
Odnoklassniki.ru, which translates as classmates.ru. Okay. Yeah. And if you're interested, we can talk about this later. I have some data from them, which I collected before they closed the loophole.
Chester Wozenski from Sophos again. For the sites that allow things like Google or, dare I suggest, Bing, to crawl them, it prevents you from crawling, say, to use Facebook as an example directly, but it wouldn't really prevent them from crawling Google for that very same data then, would it? I mean, there's nothing embedded in that data that protects the data at all unless they take another step.
So if the problem is indirect crawling through search, there are differences between the information provided to search engines by the OSNs versus what you can get crawling the OSN directly. So the profile information is more limited by default, which sort of helps. Yeah.
So when they recognize Googlebot, they provide a different subset of data for some of
them. Yeah. So I believe that, at least on Facebook, it's opt-in if you want to be publicly indexed now, or at least it used to be.
So while the URLs themselves aren't very useful, you can imagine if you're a social network, there has to be some sort of information associated with the link that is useful, like maybe the name of that user, or like an image URL or something. Something that identifies that link beyond just the URL. And I like crawling social networks. So if how does your system prevent this attack? The assumption is that it's a small world network, so people are close to each other. So I do my BFS search, and I keep track of sort of the names of the links, or the text of the link, rather than the link itself. Mm-hmm. And now I do DFS to get to the frontier immediately. I don't have to crawl BFS style to get back to the frontier. I can just sort of go there in a very small number of hops, and then start doing BFS from that point.
So I agree, you could do that, but it requires storing a lot of state and being able to query it very quickly to do that.
Okay.
Especially if you're talking about a big OSN.
Hi, Elias Tansopoulos from Forth. Users are used to exchange URLs using instant messaging or email. How can you do that if you encrypt them?
Excellent question. That's why it has a backup slide. So yes, this is the caveat here. If you're encrypting the URLs, it becomes very hard to share. Now, the thing is that, so first of all, there's lots of things that already break URL sharing, and it's sort of annoying. You know, you can't link to shopping carts, you can't link to pages with a lot of AJAX. So users are sort of aware of this and ready to deal with it. But the other thing, from at least the technology standpoint, is the pages that are important to crawlers are different than the pages that are important to people. So for example, if I want to link you to something, it's probably a photograph or an event. But what the crawler really wants is the lists of people, because that's how it powers its search. So with SpikeStrip, you can use regex to say certain pages are secure and certain ones are not. So you can use that to make permalinks to the things that people care about, but then the stuff that's very valuable to the crawlers, you just protect that. So you can differentiate, and that makes it a little bit easier.